from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to this Election Day edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, with the backdrop of the threats of civil unrest from the left, record numbers of Americans have and are casting their ballots today. President Trump made one of his final appeals in Michigan last night.
If you want your children to be safe, if you want your values to be honored, if you want your life to be treated with dignity and respect, then I am asking you to go to the poll tomorrow and vote, vote, vote. Remember what I said 4 years ago. I am your voice, and we will make America great again, and that's what we're doing.
While we are still a few hours away from the polls closing, what can we surmise from the numbers that are already in? George Barna is here in just a moment to take a look at the data. Also, speaking of the threat of unrest by the left, what, if any, actions are Homeland Security taking to keep Americans safe from both internal and external threats surrounding the election? We'll talk with Ken Cuccinelli, Acting Deputy Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, later here on Washington Watch. And FRC Action, the sister organization of FRC, the Family Research Council, has been on the ground in 8 of the major battleground states. In the last 2 weeks alone, we've had 555 people knocking on doors, reaching out to over 1 million voters. We've delivered over 4 million voter guides, and a little later we'll hear directly from FRC Action team members that are on the ground in Michigan, Florida, and North Carolina. So stay tuned for those updates from the field. Now, if by chance you are listening to this program and you have not yet voted, there is still time to do so, especially if you head to the polls right now. For a tailored voter guide on your way, of course, pull off the side of the road. Don't text while you're driving. Text your zip code to 53445. That number again, 53445. Just put in your zip code to that number and you will get a tailored voter guide as you head to the polls before they close tonight. Let me remind you, there's resources also at PrayVoteStand.org. In fact, tune in this evening to PrayVoteStand.org, or you can watch on my Facebook page. We'll be providing election night analysis at the bottom of each hour, beginning at 8:30. We won't go for the whole hour, but every hour at the bottom of every hour, beginning at 8:30, I'll be joined by members of Congress, including the chairman of the Republican Study Committee, Congressman Mike Johnson, Congressman Dan Bishop of North Carolina, former Ohio Secretary of State Kim Blackwell will be one of our guests, and my next guest will be joining us as well, George Barna, and many others. Again, that's the bottom of every hour beginning at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time at PrayVoteStand.org. Without question, the year 2020 is one for the record books. A global pandemic that stalled a record economy, shuttered churches, civil unrest, record-setting natural disasters, and in the midst of all of that, one of the most contentious and consequential elections in modern time. Now, President Trump, again yesterday, did 5 campaign rallies. He was in 5 different states while Joe Biden stayed in Pennsylvania. At his last rally in Michigan last night, President Trump laid out what the next 4 years of a Trump administration would look like.
With your vote, we will continue to cut your taxes, cut regulations, support our police, support our great military, protect your Second Amendment, which is gone if Sleepy Joe Biden gets. Defend religious liberty and ensure more products are proudly made with that beautiful, beautiful phrase, right? Made in the USA.
Now, that was juxtaposed with what President Trump said 4 years of a Harris-Biden administration would look like.
If Biden, Harris, and the radical left gain power, they will collapse our economy and send your nation, this wonderful nation, into a depression. That was is what, you know, they wanted. This is the only guy I've ever seen who runs by saying, we will. He doesn't say it like that. He goes, we will. We will raise your taxes. I never heard that before. You know, I've covered politicians. I've been friends of politicians. I've been enemies also. But I've never seen somebody saying, we will raise your taxes. They want to give you the largest tax increase in the history of our country. And we can't let that happen. We can't let that happen.
I think it was clear to most voters what was at stake in this election, with early voting setting records. In fact, six states had already surpassed the 2016 turnout before the polls even opened this morning. Now, what does this record-setting turnout tell us about the election? Joining me now is the president of Metaformation, Inc., George Barna. He is also a senior research fellow at the Center for Christian Ethics and Biblical Worldview here at FRC and the director of research at the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University. George, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, so George, what do we know about voters going into this election? Record turnout, early voting, of course, a lot of people trying to avoid the exposure from the coronavirus, but a lot of enthusiasm. What does that tell us?
Well, essentially, people understand that this election really isn't even about the candidates. It's about the worldview that will drive the nation forward for the next few years. As we've looked at the research for people supporting either of the candidates, those who plan to vote for President Trump are voting for President Trump. They're excited about him. They believe in him. Those who are voting for Joe Biden aren't that excited about him, but they don't like President Trump. Mr. Trump has really become the key issue in this election, and that's because he really has such a distinct point of view, and he's one of the unusual politicians who's made promises and carried them through. And therefore, people know exactly what he stands for. They know exactly what they're voting for if they vote for him. With Mr. Biden, there's been 48 years where he's had a chance to show us what he stands for. People still aren't sure. The one thing they know that he will do is raise taxes.
So I want to get into that economic aspect of the Biden-Harris plan, what administration would look like. But let's talk a little bit about what you just said, that it's not so much that people are for Joe Biden, they're against Donald Trump. Is it enough to be against somebody to win an election? Don't you usually have to have someone that inspires, rallies, and helps motivate people to get the ticket across the line?
Well, actually, if we look at the 2016 election, a lot of the Donald Trump vote was anti-Clinton vote. So it wasn't so much that they were excited about Mr. Trump, because, again, back at that point, they didn't know anything about him. He had no political track record. They didn't feel necessarily that they could trust him. It wasn't until now, where they've seen what he's done, he's carried through, that trust has been built. But 6 years ago, there really wasn't any trust for either of the candidates. So a lot of the vote that was for Mr. Trump at that time was an anti-Clinton vote. So, you know, it can work either way. You would prefer, and I think the country is often better off, if you've got people excited about a leader that they want to get behind. We've got that with Republicans and Mr. Trump. We don't see that with Democrats and Mr. Biden.
Now, one of the issues that is often a deciding factor, not necessarily for the sage cons, the spiritually active, governance engaged, those evangelicals who understand that policy shapes our culture, but the economy is a driving issue. And the president brought that up yesterday in one of his rallies. Bobby, play clip number three.
A recent Gallup poll found that 56% of Americans say they are better off today than they were 4 years ago under Obama and Biden.
Does your research show the same thing, that people are more content economically? They feel like they're better off now than they were 4 years ago?
It does. What we found is that most people believe that Mr. Trump would do a better job managing the economy if he were elected than Mr. Biden would do. The fascinating thing, though, when we look at economics is the growing number of people in America who, despite the fact that Mr. Trump has shown that our economy can prosper and that there are ways that we can rebuild it, and in the last quarter that's been done. But what they're saying is they would prefer socialism. That's one of the few things that Mr. Biden really has for him on the economic front, is that you've got a lot of young people in particular, especially people under the age of 35, who are saying they believe that America would be better off with a socialist system than a capitalistic system.
So when the president is pointing out, like we did yesterday here with Kamala Harris, essentially embracing socialism as the way forward for the country, that may sound bad to those over the age of 35, but those under the age of 35, that's actually something that attracts them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, very much. I mean, the Democrats in this particular race are suffering from an enthusiasm gap. One of the things that gets people out to vote is when they hear things that get them excited. A lot of the things that Mr. Biden has talked about don't particularly get people excited. But there are some key words, and of course, Democrats are very keen on using language that gets people motivated. When you talk about socialism with certain segments of their voting bloc, particularly the young people, particularly minority people, that gets them excited.
So, George Barna, based upon what you're seeing in terms of early voting, what you're seeing today in record turnouts, any prediction as to how this national election might go?
You know, one of the things that you always look for is momentum. And I think as you look at this particular election, it's indisputable that the momentum has been behind Mr. Trump. Now, the question with momentum is always, did it happen early enough for it to have its full effect, or did it start too late? We won't know that until after tonight, but I think there's a good shot that Mr. Trump has enough momentum to carry him over the finish line.
Yeah, I think that's right. When you've had over 90 million votes cast already going into Election Day, a record number, you're right. The momentum needed to come earlier. But I do think it shows quite a contrast. There's a contrast in the policies. There's a contrast in the way they campaign. There is a contrast in the enthusiasm behind the two candidates. George, let me ask you this question. I want to jump ahead for a moment here. And based upon what we see in terms of trends, going back to this issue of socialism, where there are many within the Democratic Party that fully embrace this idea, and young people indoctrinated by our education system over the last decade and a half or more are very excited about the prospects. If, let's say, Donald Trump does win, and we're praying and hoping that happens, what needs to take place in the next 4 years to shift the direction of this country, not just in this election, but going forward?
Well, certainly there is a great need for education. When you look at why it is that so many young people think socialism is the future solution for America, clearly it's because that's what they've been taught. Now, I would suggest that as you look at the curriculum in the places where they've been taught that, as you look at the people who support that, who have been teaching them that, our young people have not been given the full picture. They haven't been given a good sense of what socialism really means and the results of socialism throughout the world over the course of human history, really. I mean, it doesn't work. And so I think we've got to be in a period of education where people get the information they need to make better decisions.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. In fact, I think we already saw that yesterday with the president's executive order on the 1776 convention commission to begin, again, teaching American history. I think that's a part of it. George Barna, we're going to talk to you tonight as we do election analysis. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, tune in tonight. George is going to be joining us as one of our experts as we do analysis tonight as the election returns come in. But coming up next, should we expect post-election violence? We'll talk with the acting Deputy Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, Ken Cuccinelli, here on Washington Watch. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, Hannah.
What's going on? Why so gloomy?
Well, I'm a little disappointed. I had a lot planned to do during the stay-at-home time, and I just didn't do it.
Oh, yeah? What did you have planned that you didn't get to do?
Well, I was actually hoping I would finally be able to get time to do a regular Bible reading routine, and I started a couple of times. I just didn't stick with it.
Don't be too down on yourself. Starting a new routine can be hard, but one way to help is to join in with others and to have a good game plan. I think I have a good solution for you.
Oh, yeah?
Tony Perkins and FRC are doing a 2-year study in the Word. They have it all mapped out.
When did they start? I would be so far behind.
Oh, that's not a problem. You can literally jump in anytime. There's a daily reading, just a couple of chapters a day, with questions to help you think about what you're reading.
Nice. Where can I find this?
Go to frc.org/Bible, and you can get started.
Where's that again?
FRC.org/Bible.
Got it. Checking it out now.
In a recent poll, it was revealed that only 6% of Americans hold a biblical worldview. This research also indicated that Christianity's teachings on abortion, marriage, and homosexuality are not only misunderstood, but seen as dangerous and subversive. In response to this trend, Family Research Council has released a new set of resources in our Biblical Worldview series. In addition to our full publications, which cover the topics of Christian political engagement, abortion, religious liberty, and human sexuality, FRC now offers helpful summaries of each publication in this series, as well as accompanying prayer guides to help you and your family pray through these important issues. And finally, our popular Biblical Principles for Political Engagement is now available in Spanish. All these resources are free and available at frc.org/worldview. Again, that's frc.org/worldview.
Masculinity in America has never been under attack the way it is today. We've reached the point where the term itself is considered toxic or offensive to many. The consistent message in our nation is that masculinity by nature is bad and is the root cause of many of the problems plaguing our society. From his experience as a military combat officer and ordained minister of the gospel, Lieutenant General William Boykin has seen and dealt with firsthand the breakdown of leadership in our nation by the lack of godly men living lives of biblical purpose. In his latest book, Man to Man, Rediscovering Masculinity in a Challenging World, he addresses the essential elements of manhood as a provider, an instructor, a defender, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, and explains how to personally develop these traits and pass them to the next generation. Get your copy today of Man to Man wherever books are sold. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, your host. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter or Parler, it's at T Perkins. I have a poll question for today. I really am interested, you know, with all the enthusiasm that we are seeing, and I've seen it. I've been traveling the country the last 4 weeks. And here's a question for you. I'd like to get your take on it. Were you more or less vocal about supporting candidates in 2020 than in past years? Are you more engaged in, you know, encouraging people to vote, whether it's for the president, congressional races, Senate races? You know, were you more engaged this time? Text the word radio to 53445, radio to 53445. That's 53445, the word radio, and I'll send you a link to take the poll question. All right, as we mentioned in the previous segment, the 2020 elections, it's coming to an end, but don't expect the drama to stop right away. Mail-in ballots will most likely extend this process. And if the election is close, expect legal challenges. But some on the left are pledging to contest the election in another way. President Trump addressed this yesterday in Wisconsin.
And as I'm sure you've heard, Biden's far-left supporters are threatening to loot and riot tomorrow if they don't get their way. If they don't get their way. Are we all ready, David? Everybody ready? If they know we're ready and if they know we're not playing games, they won't even be here. They won't show up.
Joining me now to talk about the preparations and the possibility of post-election violence is a member of the Trump administration's Department of Homeland Security, Acting Deputy Secretary of the Department, Ken Cuccinelli. Ken, welcome back to the program.
Tony, good to be with you, as always.
So I know 4 years ago there was demonstrations when the president was sworn into office 4 years ago. So we know that this is possible. We've seen it for the last 6-7 months. We've seen demonstrations across the country. Department of Homeland Security, are you taking precautions for increased levels of violence, even here in D.C. and elsewhere?
We are. We've been planning jointly with the Department of Justice for some time now so that we are prepared for any possible contingency, including violence. And of course, for the last number of months, sadly, we've been seeing a good bit of violence. So The concept is not new to us, nor is our participation in protecting communities at the direction of the president. He's been very forward-leaning on this, as I know you know, Tony. He's made it very clear that any state or local authority that is facing this that wants to request federal help is going to get it. And he has often browbeats them into asking for that help. We can't just walk into every community. We can act on our own to protect federal facilities and people at those facilities and so forth. But that is that number of possible outcomes there is enormous, right? And it'll vary from city to city and state to state. But we're unfortunately have had a lot of experience in the last 5-6 months responding to these situations all over the country. And it's part of what I think people appreciate about this president is he is a rule of law president. He does want to bring peace to every community, regardless of the politics of that community. And he isn't willing to tolerate the kind of violence that we've seen pop up in places like Portland and New York City and recently Philadelphia. And we could go on around the country.
So Ken, let me just add, what do you anticipate? Do you think there's a high probability that we're going to see violence in the streets?
You know, I hate to ever say there's a high probability that Americans are just going to go throw temper tantrums to the point of violence. But we have seen it, as you noted, at the president's inaugural and thereafter. A lot of the complaints are focused on him, and they frankly aren't very constructive participants in the public discussion. Is that a gentle way to put it? So I have to say that we will at least be ready, and we operate on the assumption there will be a problem, because by operating that way, we make it less likely, or if it does happen, we make it less severe, because we're already on top of it and we're as prepared as we can be. And like I said, working with the Department of Justice for the last couple of weeks, we've been preparing not just for today, but for the weeks to come after the election is after Election Day.
Yeah, and I have to be very clear. This comes from the left. I mean, in 2012, when there was a Barack Obama was up for re-election, and there's a lot of us didn't like his leftist policies. But when we lost the election, he came back in.
It was over.
Yeah, the Baptists and the Tea Party members didn't go out and start burning and looting. It was peaceful. It was the way it is. But this is coming from the left, and I think we got to call it out where it's coming from. I want to move on, though, before we run out of time, because I want to talk about one of the major accomplishments that this president has done, because, when he made promises, he has kept them. And part of that was the border wall. And you've been your department's overseen that. Where do we stand with the border wall?
Well, I was just down in the Tucson sector yesterday, Tony, and really extraordinary engineering accomplishment. It isn't just the wall. I mean, heck, the access road is harder to build in lots of parts of the border than the wall is. And it's great engineering feat. We're at 400 miles and counting. President's funded over 730 miles of border wall, and it really makes a difference. Heard from agents yesterday who just talk about them doing their job day to day. They're safer doing it, and they're more effective. And they aren't just police on the beat. They're part of national security, protecting every single person listening to you and me talk right now. And what they do down there makes a difference in every community. All the drugs, all the drug overdoses in every community are coming across that southwest border. A lot of the illegal aliens that commit crimes themselves in your community coming across that border. And this president has kept his promises to bring that down and to reestablish the rule of law.
And I would add to that, Ken, the human trafficking also
yep.
coming
it's
across that border that
yep.
has been really squelched by this administration. I've been to the border as well and have seen that. Ken, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the great work
Tony,
that you all do over
pleasure.
At Homeland Security. All right.
We're going to keep it up.
All right, folks. Tony. Yes. Promises made, promises kept. We're seeing them. Of course, the media doesn't want to report on that. They don't want to report on that because it would affirm the fact that you are supportive of this administration. All right, when we come back, we're going to get a report from Michigan. Chuck Bistham is with FRC Action. He's on the field. He talks to us next. Don't go away.
Since the 1973 Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, Congress and many states have taken various actions to stop taxpayer dollars from funding abortions or the abortion industry. As early as 1976, Congressman Henry Hyde led the effort to ban federal funding for abortions. The Federal Hyde Amendment, named after him, established the principle that abortion is not health care, and therefore taxpayers should not be forced to fund abortions. Despite these efforts, the abortion industry still receives millions of dollars each year in taxpayer money. In 2019, Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion provider, received $616.8 million in government funds. Family Research Council's newly updated pro-life map tracks how your state has taken action to stop taxpayer funding of abortions. Go to frc.org/pro-life maps to see where your state stands in the fight for life. That's frc.org/pro-life maps.
Aw, man.
What's wrong?
I just missed Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, and our congressman was going to be on the show today.
Oh, that's not a big deal.
What do you mean?
Well, you can always catch the replay of the day's show.
How's that?
With the Stand Firm app.
Yeah?
Yep, you can catch that day's program and so much more. You can contact your elected officials on campaigns and policies that are important to you with the Take Action tab. You can listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins live and play previous episodes while conveniently going about your day. You can access the Washington Update, informative blogs, tweets, and critical campaigns on the main feed so you can stay up to date on local and national news.
Wow, I definitely use that. How do you find the app?
Just visit frc.org/app and download, or search Stand Firm in the App Store.
Okay, that's Stand Firm.
Yep, Stand Firm.
How do you know all this?
Because I'm a SageCon, but that's another story.
Huh?
This is Washington Watch, and I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me again remind you, beginning at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, at the bottom of every hour, we'll have election analysis tonight here at the FRC headquarters in Washington, D.C. I also mentioned at the top of the program that FRC Action, our sister organization, has been on the ground in 8 of the major battleground states. In fact, in the last 2 weeks, we've had over 550 people knocking on doors, mostly young people, high schoolers with Generation Joshua, reaching out to over 1 million voters. We've delivered over 4 million voter guides and tons of campaign-related, election-related resource material, helping people make those decisions, comparisons between the two parties, their platforms, the scorecard, or the voter guides, all those things we've been putting out there. So one of those key states is the state of Michigan, where we have been operating for some time, and joining us now on the ground, in fact, in Sturgis, Michigan, at one of the polling places, is our Bold Advance field representative, Chuck Bistham. Chuck, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's an honor to be with you.
So you are you're at one of the polling spots. I think it's in Sturgis, Michigan. What's it looking like there today?
It is busy. I'm in the parking lot outside the main voting center in our city, and it's jam full, and it's been busy all day long. So the turnout here has been excellent, and we're a very rural community. And for the president to do well in Michigan, the rural communities, it's got to turn out, and we certainly have here in Sturgis tonight.
So what are you hearing, Chuck, as you talk to voters? Do they express that enthusiasm, that passion when you talk to them? What's motivating them to vote?
Well, I think there's been a tremendous enthusiasm for the president from conservatives, for sure. And I think that they've just been – I think a lot of people have really had the attitude they can't wait to vote. And so there's been that urgency and that excitement. On the other hand, I do agree with George Barner earlier that a lot of people that are voting – I'm not voting for the president. It seems to be an anti-Trump vote rather than a for-Biden vote.
So when you talk with, and I know you've been working on the ground there for some time, but the enthusiasm level, and the president, obviously, he's not he's not a wallflower. He's easy to you know where he stands, and so he instills a lot of passion in people just because he's passionate. But when you look at the driving force, are there particular issues that people are articulating, saying, "I'm voting for the president because he has done A, B, and C"?
Well, yeah, I agree. From a Christian perspective, obviously, the fact that he's pro-life, the fact that he is pro-biblical family, the fact that he is a conservative, governing from the conservative side, has been a great assistance. I know a lot of my friends, a lot of people I know that are Christians, last time, you know, they were really reluctant to vote for President Trump. They just didn't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. But this time they're excited about voting for President Trump. So there's a huge difference there. And I think the economy is a big thing. Here in Michigan, we're just now getting our economy back to where it was before the 2008 recession, and things have been going well. And so the fact that more people trust President Trump economically, I think is going to have a play here in Michigan as well.
You know, he is speaking of Michigan and the economy. Yesterday at his rally, he called on the governor there, the Democratic governor, to open up the state. When people see and they feel what's been happening there with the lockdown, it's had an economic impact, it's had a social impact, it's had an impact on the churches. Do people see that and identify that with a Biden-Harris administration as a Democratic administration, that they appear to all have the same view that government knows better?
Well, I think they don't blame the president for that here for the most part. I don't believe they do. Governor Whitmer is the one here in Michigan that has instituted a lot of those slowdowns. And in fact, just last week, we had some new regulations come out for restaurants that they now need to start taking down names and phone numbers of people who just simply go out to eat. So I think that is resonating with a lot of people. I don't see them blaming the president for that. I do see a lot of reaction against our Democratic governor for that.
And when President Trump is offering something different, maybe that may be a motivating factor for people to be supportive of him as well, juxtaposing it to the heavy hand of Democratic governors like yours.
Certainly. And I think especially small business people have really been hurt here in Michigan. And they're just ready to open up. They're ready to be able to. And one of the problems, we're right on the border with Indiana here, and Indiana has been a much more open state than Michigan has. And economically, for the southern tier of Michigan, that's been devastating to the southern part of the state.
Mm. Chuck Bistam, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate the work you're doing there on the ground in the important state of Michigan.
Thank you, sir.
All right, Chuck Bistam. He is FRC's Bold Advance field representative in Michigan. When we come back, we're going to go to a couple more battleground states. We're going to first go to Florida talk to one of our representatives down there. Then we're going to go to North Carolina. So we're going to take you around the country, some of these battleground states, get a sense of what's going on the ground there. By the way, take our poll question. How engaged have you been? Text the word radio to 53445, 53445, the word radio, and I'll send you a link to take the poll question. And also, remember, beginning 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, at the bottom of every hour, we'll be doing election analysis here at our headquarters in D.C., so tune in for that. Don't go away. We're coming back after this.
With the 2020 presidential election just around the corner, FRC Action has released an important set of resources for Spanish-speaking voters. These resources include a presidential voter guide, a party platform comparison, and voter guides for key Senate and governor's races. Other resources in Spanish include the Trump Accomplishments List, Biblical Principles for Political Engagement, and Legal Do's and Don'ts for Pastors and Churches when it comes to politics. The purpose of these resources is to inform Hispanic voters about the important issues facing our country and to equip them to engage with the election from a biblical worldview. Again, all of these resources and more are now available for free at prayvotestand.org/Spanish resources. Again, that's prayvotestand.org/Spanish resources.
When President Donald Trump announced his nomination of Judge Amy Coney Barrett to the Supreme Court, critics were quick to point not to this qualified nominee's record, but rather to her religious affiliations as a reason she ought not be allowed to serve as a Supreme Court justice. In an increasingly secular culture, it is not only the media that views faith as problematic for those appointed to judicial positions. Senators, particularly Democrats, have inappropriately interrogated nominees with comments and lines of questioning spanning theology, congregation membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits, all seemingly with the intent to discredit the nominees. Family Research Council recently released a publication addressing this important issue. To learn more about what the Constitution says about religious tests, visit frc.org/religious tests. That's frc.org/religious tests.
Wouldn't you like to know if someone on your ballot supports partial birth abortion before you vote? What about a candidate that supports taking away your guns, doesn't protect religious freedom, or is endorsed by Bernie Sanders? You can easily know where the candidates on your ballot stand on these issues and other issues that matter to you. How? FRC Action has the quickest voter education tool ever created. Simply text your zip code to 53445 right now, and you'll get FRC Action's voter guide for the candidates on your ballot. It'll take you 3 seconds to get information that would take you weeks to gather on your own. It will show you voting records, endorsements, and even who's giving these candidates money. Simply text your zip code to 53445, and within seconds, you'll receive FRC Action's voter guide, and then you'll know who to vote for on your ballot. And you just may be the most informed voter you know. Text your zip code to 53445. Happy voting.
All right, folks, welcome back. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me give you one more chance to take the poll question. Some interesting results coming in already. Text the word radio to 53445. That's the word radio to 53445. Question is, have you been more involved in this election than in past elections, more vocal in encouraging people to vote? So take the poll question, and I'll give the results here in just a bit. And again, beginning 8:30 p.m. Eastern time at the bottom of every hour, we'll be giving you election analysis. Members of Congress, George Barna will be here, some of our in-house experts, Ken Blackwell, former Secretary of State, as we track some of these potentially contested elections, these states. He'll be here to talk about that as well. All right, the 2020 election is coming to a close, at least to the voting portion of it should. And what can we expect in these battleground states? We just talked about Michigan. There's a lot of enthusiasm there. And another state to keep an eye on is Florida. Now, I was in Miami on Sunday. I talked about this yesterday. It was down there. Saw a lot of activity. Spoke at one of the largest Hispanic churches there in Miami. And then went out to one of the polling places. The early voting ended on Sunday. And a lot of activity. In fact, the Democratic Party is concerned with the strong Republican turnout in Miami-Dade County, which Democrats have little chance of winning the state without winning Miami-Dade. They have to win that in order to be able to hold on to the state. But how is the rest of the state looking? Join me now with an answer to that question and talk about what is happening on the ground is FRC Action's bold advance field representative in Florida, Sue Trombino. Sue, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Tony. It's been a real privilege and honor to be doing what we're doing down here in Florida.
Well, and I've seen your handiwork. Actually, I saw FRC Action Vote Pro-Life signs at the polling spots there in Miami when I was there on Sunday. So the work is getting done. So tell our listeners, what are you seeing on the ground there in Florida?
Well, I can tell you that this evening, as I'm driving around in our big bus, we have a Saving Our Republic, Ensuring Liberty bus. This morning, lots and lots of people going out to vote. I don't know quite the number. I'm trying to confirm the number, but they said by 11 o'clock. It was like in this area. I'm in Boca Raton right now. So taking up the East Coast up to the Treasure Coast, it was like 68. Lots and lots of people voting. Right now, I have to say I've been driving to at least 8 polling sites and very, very few people. It's like everybody's already voted. But the enthusiasm with cars and people with their Trump signs and trucks, and it's just been amazing. And yes, the Latins, obviously coming from Caracas, Venezuela, I've been talking to Latins, and they do not want socialism. That is a very big deal. And you did an amazing job. Your sermon was awesome on Sunday at Bishop Maldonado's church. But right now, it seems, I have to say, it seems a little bit more on the quiet side. It just seems like everybody has already gone and voted. The signs are all out, but hardly anybody's in line, which is very, it's just amazing. But there was a lot of people that voted early, but especially this morning.
I think Florida was one of those states where they pushed a lot of early voting. In fact, 6 states had already exceeded 2016 turnout this morning when the polls opened. So that was, a lot of people voting early because of the coronavirus and such. But let me ask you this, Sue, in terms of the enthusiasm level, I've been to Florida a few times in the last few weeks, and I've never seen this before. Maybe I've missed it, but I've been in politics for a quarter of a century. The parades, the Trump parades that they were doing, the caravans with the flags and all of that, I've seen those in multiple places in Florida. What is driving as you talk to voters there in the Sunshine State, what is driving the support for Donald Trump?
On Sunday, my husband and I were just driving.
Oh, I think we're losing you there, Sue. Might be in a bad. I think you're in a bad cell area. Try it again.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
So Sunday, there is so many spontaneous, just car parades. It's just insane. I've never ever seen anything like it. And young people, there was easily 700 cars that just came up out of the blue, and most everybody was young people. My husband and I noticed that. Young people, I stopped and talked with a couple that were at a gas station, and they're just on fire for President Trump. They do not want socialism. They seem to get it. A lot of them that we spoke with were in their 30s, and they just seem to get it. And I think the left, to be honest with you, I think the left has overplayed their hand. And when you start saying you're going to, do fracking, you're just take everything away that Americans value, obviously religious freedom, especially in the Latin community, especially down here in South Florida, we're talking Venezuelans, Cubans. We've already experienced socialism, and that's not, people don't want to do that. And just even talking to a 22-year-old on Saturday, it was amazing how articulate this young man was. He was very knowledgeable, and he said maybe 10% of his friends would vote for Biden, but the rest of them are all for Trump. So there's
that makes Florida unique because of, as you said, that Latin influence where they've seen up close and personal what socialism does. And even into the second generation of the Cubans that are there understand the value and the price of freedom. And so I think that is clearly a deciding factor there in the state of Florida. Sue, I've got to run on to North Carolina. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for the great job you're doing there in Florida.
Well, thank you so much for everything you do, Tony. God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America. And we just have to put God first. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Absolutely. Sue Trombino from Florida, FRC Action's Bold Advance field representative down there. Now we're going to go to North Carolina, where Mark Harris is on the ground in North Carolina to give us details on what what's happening there in that all-important state where, quite frankly, FRC action's been in North Carolina longer than any other state, and Mark's been a key part of that as we've built out these community impact teams and churches all across that state. Mark, what's it looking like there in North Carolina?
Well, Tony, there's a whole lot of excitement, I think, that has just been building and building here in North Carolina. Obviously, the president has made this a definite key place where he has been camping out in his campaign, because between the president and the vice president and the vice president's wife and the first lady and the whole family, there rarely has been a single day over the last several weeks that there hasn't been somebody here in North Carolina doing a rally or doing an event. But it's been good. Today, Election Day, early this morning, there were lines in a number of the places of folks waiting to get in to vote. I'm actually here at Elizabeth Lane Elementary School, which is a polling place in Mecklenburg County. And Mecklenburg County is interesting because this is a place that the president only polled 33% in Mecklenburg County in North Carolina in 2016. And so it contains Charlotte. But this is part of Charlotte that is kind of toward the suburbs. And it's real interesting when you see and look at the way the numbers are turning out that once again, we're seeing in the heavy Republican turnout today that it's been quite high. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see how it comes in. And then when you get into neighboring Union County, Tony, they voted early voting 112,000 people voted out of Union County, and they only have a total registration in that county of 164,000.
Wow.
So today they got 52,000 people that would have voted their entire county. And from what I've heard, and this was exciting, I just talked to somebody about 30 minutes ago, and they said, you know, the precincts that are heavily Democrat are actually just not turning out today. I guess they voted out early, but the more Democratic districts are turning out 4-1 over in Union County, which that was pretty exciting as well.
So, Mark, let me ask you, as we were talking with Chuck Vistam up in Michigan, obviously a Democratic governor there that basically shut down that state. Roy Cooper, Democratic governor there in North Carolina, been heavy-handed in the way that he has dealt with the coronavirus. Does that help President Trump there when people see what freedom could look like as opposed to having living under the heavy hand of a big government Democrat?
Well, I think so. I think there's no question, you know, the people in North Carolina that have restaurants and even bars for that matter that have not been allowed to reopen, movie theaters that went so long without being able to reopen, and now under such a low percentage, I don't think many of them are able to even make ends meet. In that way, there's a lot of businesses that have suffered in North Carolina as a result of Governor Cooper's edicts that he has brought down. But and again, even with that, we're still facing a surge right now in North Carolina with somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 new cases each day just in the last week. So I think people are recognizing that we've got to learn to live with the challenges.
You can't hide from it. You hide from it. You go inside, you lock yourself in, and the virus is just waiting. I mean, when you go out, it's going to eventually get you. I mean, you just got to come to reality with we've got to face this just like we face anything else. All right, let me ask you this. I want you to do a comparison for me because, as I mentioned, Mark Harris, you've been with us for quite some time. You helped organize, were part of organizing the state 4 years ago, which was critical in the Trump victory, in working in the churches, culture impact teams that we've had in over 800 churches there in the state. As you've traveled the state, how do you gauge the enthusiasm this cycle as opposed to 2016?
Oh, yes. I would say that for the president, for the conservative values that we hold, the enthusiasm across the state is probably higher even than it was in 2016. And I'll tell you, you know, when we talk about urban-rural divide, there is nowhere that has experienced that more than North Carolina. But I think, you know, instead of just whining about it, I think the president and his team obviously embraced it this time. And that's where I think the community impact teams have had such a great help in North Carolina, because the focus has been, okay, instead of whining about the big urban turnout, you just got to increase the rural turnout and just have a higher percentage. And the churches in many of our areas, when they just get their people, they may only run 150, 200 people in their church on Sunday, but if you get most of them engaged in issues and willing to stand up on principle, then it's going to pay off. And listen, just this past week, I was talking to a guy, a pastor, running for county commissioner down in Bladen County, North Carolina. And I was talking to him, and in that process, I said, how are things going? He said, well, I'm getting ready to pray at an Eric Trump rally. I said, Eric Trump is in Bladen County? He said, yep. He's coming to Elizabethtown in this county. And I said, wow, that's amazing. And he said, you know where he's coming from? I said, where? He said, Ellerbe. But Tony, Ellerbe is a little town in Richmond County, which is one of the poorer counties. I'm very familiar with it because it was in the 9th Congressional District of North Carolina, as was Bladen County back in 2018. And they have chosen to go, just like the president, coming to Gastonia, North Carolina, and doing a rally there just the other Wednesday night. They are embracing the rural, and those folks are turning out and responding. And I think that's going to be a big, big difference this time.
Yeah, the president has a political sense and insight that a few other Republican candidates have shown in the past. Mark, a final question for you. I know that with the coronavirus and the lockdown of churches, the community impact teams have kind of transitioned, and they've been making phone calls in a kind of an organized effort to make sure that vote is turning out. So even though the churches may not be meeting in full numbers, those community impact teams were still hard at work.
They have been hard at work, and they've been making phone calls throughout the state. They've also been making a priority to make phone calls to their church membership, just to remind everybody in the church of the importance of getting out to vote. And the voter guides have been huge. And, of course, you know, we can talk about the work that's going on with the young people that have come to North Carolina and that have been knocking doors. FRC has helped facilitate all of that. And I talked to someone just earlier today, and they made just since Friday, targeting our voters, getting them out. They have made over 300,000 phone calls and have been knocking on doors with over 25,000 doors that they have reached just since Friday. And right, and they're still working. They had a couple hours to go when I was talking to somebody about 5 o'clock.
No vote left uncast. Mark Harris, thanks so much for joining us, and appreciate all the great work you're doing there in North Carolina and elsewhere around the country.
Well, thank you for your leadership, Tony, and God's using Family Research Council in a phenomenal way, and we're very thankful.
All right. Well, folks, got to leave it there. Tune in tonight, 8:30 Eastern Time. At the bottom of every hour, we'll give you election analysis. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, when he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.